through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It is Wild Card Weekend. This weekend, you got a double triple header with three games Saturday, three games Sunday. Seahawks, the middle-of-the-day game on Saturday. I'll go ahead and tell you the wild card matchups. You've got Colts at Bills kicking everything off at 10 a.m. local time. Well, as in here. Rams at Seahawks. Obviously, we're watching that one at 1:40 p.m. And the evening game, Buccaneers at Washington football team. Sunday, Ravens at Titans. Then Bears at Saints. And to cap it all off, you've got the Browns versus the 12-4 number two-seeded Steelers. Number two, three. Now that I'm looking at all these wild cards teams, Colts, Rams, Buccaneers, Ravens, Bears, Browns, we are going to, Jake, go through the list of reasons that each and every wild card team could upset. In the case of the Bucs versus Washington, we're going to try to make the case for the NFC East division winner because the Buccaneers are favored there. So the NFC East division winner making a case for Washington, and then we'll go through all the wild cards. So let's go ahead and start with the very first game kicking all of this off. It's going to be the Colts at the number two seeded Bills, 13-3. Now, the Colts are pretty good, 11-5. But why, Jake, do they have a chance to upset Josh Allen and the Bills?
Well, I'm going to focus on the defensive side of the ball for the Colts. The Colts, for the majority of the year, have been playing very, very good defense. And they're still a really solid group. And what they do, as Bucky Brooks was on with us earlier at the noon hour, was talking about how this group doesn't play man-to-man at all. They are a zone coverage team, and they do an excellent job in their zone coverages. And what Josh Allen has been able to feast on is man-to-man coverage. They have the weapons around him to be able to dominate man-to-man coverage. That's what the Seattle Seahawks, that's why people don't play the Seattle Seahawks in much man-to-man coverage anymore, because they have been able to be dominant in these man-to-man situations. So the Colts are going to be strictly a zone team. They have a good pass rush that can get after Josh Allen. This will be a tremendous test and opportunity for Josh Allen to show that he can beat any team, any style in which they play. But the Colts have an opportunity defensively to really frustrate Josh Allen and force him to make bad, impatient decisions.
Now, I think the chance for the Colts lies on offense. It's not just because of Phillip Rivers. I think it's because their run game kind of got like a second wind in the second half of the season. Rookie Jonathan Taylor, who is, I should mention, going to be questionable for this game. No word yet on whether or not he'll actually suit up. I would assume we're going to find out on game day, 90 minutes before kickoff. Now, he had a great game against Minnesota in week two with 101 yards. Then he didn't surpass more than 17 carries at the most, no more than 68 yards through all the way until week 11. Then, final couple weeks of the season, Jake, 22 carries, 90 yards, 20 carries, 150, 30 carries, 253 in their season finale against the Jaguars. I know the Jags are awful. There's a reason they have the number one pick, but I think the one thing they have going on their side is that this rookie running back they had suddenly kind of got his legs underneath him, mm-hmm. pun intended, in that second half of the season, particularly in the last third. If he's playing, that gives them a weapon that other teams haven't seen a ton of.
That's a really good point. Really, really good point.
All right. Moving on to our next game. I'm going to go in order here of the schedule. So now we're on to the afternoon game, Saturday, January 9th. It's the 10-6 wildcard Rams at the division winner, NFC West winner, Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, I don't love talking about this. I don't love talking about the way the Rams could upset the Seahawks. But the real case in point here for me is that the Rams defense, right, which has been the storyline all week long, is able to get the best of this Seahawks offense. That their pass rush in particular, to me, Stacy, is really the key to this game. If the Rams pass rush continues to harass Russell Wilson, is able to consistently get pressure on Russell Wilson, you got Aaron Donald, Leonard Floyd, the rest of this group has been able to do a great job as a collective group to continue to get pressure on opposing quarterbacks. But if they are in Russell Wilson's face all game long and this Seahawks offensive line is not able to generate create the proper protection for Russell. I think that this is the way that the Rams shut down this Seahawks offense and that they are able to put up enough points to be able to get themselves a win here. I think it would have to be a true dominant performance from the Rams.
Now, I think that the Rams offense, I've said this before, is one of the worst offenses statistically entering the postseason. But they do still have some dudes, what I'm going to call really good players. I think that one thing the Seahawks defense, which could be without Shaquille Griffin, we learned in our last segment, one thing they cannot do is let Wolford or Goff, whoever starts, but I'm going with Wolford right now, they cannot let Wolford find Jared Goff's safety blankets. I'm talking Reynolds. I'm talking Cooper Kupp. I'm talking the tight end Higbee. Do not let him find them. Now, you can pressure a quarterback in his second ever start. It's not impossible to do. The Seahawks leading the league in sacks since week 8. This is something that is in your wheelhouse, certainly in the second half of the season. Do that. Another thing, though, that you have to keep an eye on is don't let some of those mistakes you made early in the year in your secondary rear their head in the game that right now matters most. Don't look past the Rams. Don't look past this offense, however bad you may think they are, mm-hmm. whether or not they have their starting quarterback or not, because they've still got Cooper Kupp, who constantly beat you on third down in your last matchup. Don't
yes,
let that happen again. Do not let that happen again. You've had 3 weeks now, when we finally hit Saturday, to watch tape and see exactly how they managed to do that so consistently. Hopefully you've learned from it.
Yeah, we'll see if they're able to do that. And that will be a big challenge to Ugo Amadi in particular when you talk about Cooper Kupp. And one of the things that the Rams offense, or that Sean McVay has done well is over the year, is to be able to get the ball in his playmakers' hands. They are one of the league's leaders in yards after catch, and they've got a great group that really can make you pay with when they have the ball in their hands. And one thing that they were not able to effectively do the second time around, Stacey, was get their playmakers the ball in space. And that's a credit to what the Seahawks defense was able to do. And so the question is, do you try to attack deep down the field like they did to the Arizona Cardinals? Do you disrespect the Seahawks defense like that? Or are you trying to find a variety of different ways to get the ball out on the edges and in space? So I'll be very curious to see what Sean McVay tries to do with this game plan.
Now, heading into the next game, a little trickier with this one because the wild card team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, this is your Saturday night game, is actually favored over the NFC East winner. No surprise there. It's the 7-9 Washington football team. Bucks favored by 8.5. So instead of making the case for the wild card team, we're going to be making our case for Washington football. Jake, I'll let you go first.
It's very clear. For Washington, the key to winning this game is to harass Tom Brady early and often, making him feel uncomfortable. That front four has been the dominant force for you all season long. It's the reason why you even had a chance of getting into the playoffs with an offense that has not put up a whole lot of points. And so to me, it would be, I personally want to see this happen because I want everybody to see that, look, what the Seahawks have gone through with some of these defenses, it's for real. They've been able to limit their opponents, and this isn't just the front four, but from the linebacker level to the secondary, Washington has done an outstanding job all season long, and they've been able to come up with key turnovers and put their offense in the best position possible. So that's the key for me. For Washington to have a chance to pull off this upset against Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, you got to be able to pressure and harass Tom Brady early and as often as possible.
That's really the most important point in this one for me. I mentioned that the Rams were one of the worst offenses in the postseason. The three worst offenses are Rams, I think Bears, at least until their last four games, and Washington in that order. I'll throw the Browns in there when they can't get their run game going, but we aren't to the AFC yet. So just looking at the NFC right now, Washington's offense, I think, stands the least likely chance to have its offense take over. I also look to their defense as running this game. Have Chase Young make good on that bet. And if he can't do it, they've got other players in there who can.
Mm-hmm.
I think, too, we've seen Tom Brady flustered. We've seen a version of Tom Brady that throws four touchdowns in the first half and gets 30-whatever points against the Detroit Lions. And then we've seen a version of Tom Brady that has four picks. Get that one on the field.
Right.
Watch that game tape. Figure out what happened.
People talk about, look, Russell Wilson, his turnovers this season, Tom Brady is right behind him. So you talk about a quarterback that if you're able to fluster and not give him clean, easy looks, Tom Brady this season has proven that he will give you opportunities down the field to intercept the ball. So I think that that's going to be a massive key.
All right, that wraps up Saturday's games. Heading into Sunday, first game starting 10:05 a.m. here in Washington. It's Ravens at Titans. Ravens 11-5, Titans 11-5. A pretty even matchup. Ravens, I believe, led the league in point differential. Titans obviously have Derrick Henry. I'd love to see Derrick Henry go off once again for just a phenomenal postseason run. So what's the key to the Ravens winning?
Well, the Ravens, they have a great running game of their own, and they've been able to get that going over the final weeks of the season, been able to put up a ton of points. And guess what? They're playing against a defense with the Tennessee Titans that is not very good whatsoever. So I think offensively, they are going to have success. But to avoid a shootout with the Tennessee Titans, because the Tennessee Titans have been able to average 30 points per game to end the season, you have to be able to slow down Derrick Henry, and the Ravens' strength on defense is their run defense. It's a tough task to slow down Derrick Henry. The Tennessee Titans are extremely committed to their run game. For the Ravens, if they want a chance to beat the Tennessee Titans, they have to be able to effectively limit Derrick Henry's impact, especially early in the game, and force the Tennessee Titans to have to come from behind.
I'm looking at that Titans pass rush, feeling pretty good about it. They have the third fewest sacks in the league with just 19. I think if you give Lamar Jackson more time, if you give this team time, there is an opportunity there where it can just become a shootout. So that's kind of the game I'm hoping for. Moving on to that afternoon game, final couple minutes here. We're back to the NFC with the Bears at the Saints. Now, Jake, this is a game. I know I was making my case, trying to make my case on Bold Take Thursday. Well, Bold Take Friday on a Thursday last week, saying that the Bears were going to upset the Packers. That was my bold take. It did not happen because the Packers are such a phenomenal, phenomenal offense. There was a minute there where the Bears scored first, and I was like, well, maybe this could happen. Stacey, you are a prophet. You are seeing something here. The Bears managed to, until that game, put up back-to-back-to-back-to-back games of 30-plus points. Suddenly, it was looking like Mitch Trubisky could convince this organization to give him another shot.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you're going to see that version of the Bears offense. I think you need a Saints team that's going to beat itself.
Yeah, you really do. What has to happen here is, and I would be very sad to see this, is you're going to have to see a Drew Brees evident that it is the end of his career. It's just going to have to come out and show itself and rear its ugly head that Drew Brees is on the last part of his professional career, just physically. And Drew Brees at times has, this season and seasons in the past, has looked every bit of the Drew Brees that we know and love, dicing up defenses, being surgical. But the reality is he is not able to push the ball down the field. The way that they have been able to get around that is Taysom Hill and packages for him, Alvin Kamara having an incredible year this year, being a dynamic weapon in the run game and in the passing game, just getting him the ball in space. So Drew Brees is really going to have to perform poorly in this game, in my opinion, against the Bears, for the Bears to even have a shot.
All right, last game here of Wild Card Weekend. It is the Browns in their first playoff game since 2002, 11-5. They will be playing at Pittsburgh Steelers, 12-4. Now, they did beat the Steelers in the regular season finale, January 3rd, 24-22. That was, though, against a lot of backups, including Mason Rudolph. So now they have the very unenviable position of trying to beat the same team, but with their starters in a week later.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot to ask. This is the game that I am least confident about in terms of a wild card upset. But if I'm going to make my case, it's that you look at the Bengals game tape. You look at exactly what the Bengals defense, and the Bengals defense isn't like phenomenal. I mean, they were just able to have one of their best games against the Steelers. They got turnovers. Get those takeaways. Get more possessions than the Steelers. That's going to be my key for the Browns.
Yeah, that will be a big key for the Browns to be able to capitalize on those opportunities, Stacey. You have no question. What they have to do in this game, and I really do think that this is the end of the Browns season, but it's playoff time. Who knows what happens? But if the Browns can establish the run against the Steelers team, if Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, these guys can really have a successful game on the ground, I think that gives them the opportunity to control the time of possession, for them to keep this game close, and for them to be able to put the Steelers' offense in a position that they don't want to be in. Ben Roethlisberger in this offense, they don't want to necessarily grind it out. They are built to be an aerial attack, to be able to have rhythm. And so I think that that's going to be the key for the Browns, is to be able to really establish the line of scrimmage. That's what they want to do on offense at the end of the day, is to control the game with their running backs, to be able to physically pound you. They've got one of the best offensive lines in the game, and they have to be able to utilize that.
You are listening to Jake and Stacey, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross here. Those were our keys to every single wild card upset this weekend. It'll be fun to see a few of those. Really, really hoping one of those isn't the Rams upsetting the Seahawks. Neither of us think that'll happen, but you can make a case. You can certainly make a case. Moving on, let's take a look around the rest of the NFL with NFL headlines. Getting started with the Houston Texans. There are rumors, Jake, rumors circulating. This one from Pro Football Talk, that quarterback Deshaun Watson has discussed potentially requesting a trade with some of his Texans teammates. We just listened to sound of J.J. Watt essentially apologizing to Watson for wasting one of his seasons. Here's my question. One, how likely is this? John McClain, longtime Texans beat reporter, said that he doesn't think this is happening. He doesn't think it's likely. Watson just basically signed an extension very recently to stay with this team.
Right.
Second part of this question, though, is do you think Deshaun Watson will be one of those players that's a great quarterback forever with a bad organization? Or
no.
Do you think the Texans will turn it around?
No, I don't think that will be the case, because if the Houston Texans don't turn it around, there's no loyalty here. I really don't feel like Deshaun Watson feels a loyalty to the Houston Texans. I think he will look on to greener pastures if this organization, no matter how much money they're willing to throw at him. Deshaun Watson is a competitor. He wants to win. He's not accustomed to being a part of a franchise that isn't at least in the playoff picture, right? So I think when you talk about Deshaun Watson discussing requesting a trade, I don't doubt it. If I was him, I'd probably do the same thing. If I really truly don't believe in this organization, in the hires that they are making from the structure, from the top down, why would I want to be a part of that? Now, the real answer is they don't have to do anything. Just because you request a trade doesn't mean that they need to fulfill your request. And they can make you stick there, and that's probably what they're going to do. The best thing that they have going for them as a franchise right now, and to draw in an appeal to head coaches out there looking to take this job, is, hey, we've got Deshaun Watson. We've already got a franchise quarterback. But the hard reality is that they don't have a whole lot of draft capital. They're in a really bad place cap position-wise. So the only thing that they have going for them is number four. And so they're not going to give up Deshaun Watson, even if he requests a trade.
Fair, fair. In news that surprised absolutely no one, Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence officially declared for the NFL draft. That was on Wednesday. Congratulations to his new career as the number one pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, Jake, I get a little bit of PTSD when it comes to quarterbacks I think are going to be good because they're so great at the collegiate level, or they're stars at the collegiate level, and then it just doesn't transition. Now, I think the bigger problem is the way that we, the royal we, evaluate quarterback talent in the first place. I think that's been behind a lot of that disappointment. So I'll ask you, a quarterback, when you actually look at Trevor Lawrence, do you see a transcendent talent?
I do. I do see a transcendent talent. But the key is what are you surrounding him with? And I mean that.
Are you going to be not like just, a Joe Burrow?
Not just on the field,
yeah,
right? But what did Joe Burrow actually get? I mean, if you evaluate Joe Burrow's season without the injury, he was actually having a really good season as a rookie, right? And so I believe that they actually did a really good job creating an environment. Zach Taylor should get a lot of credit for the job that he's done or did with Joe Burrow and his development and bringing him along and calling plays that fit to his strengths. They have to be able to find that same type of play caller for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So who is that going to be? It's got to be an offensive-minded head coach that can really get the best out of Trevor Lawrence, in my opinion, and really establish a dynamic offense and help his transition, much like the Chiefs were able to do for Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes did not come from a traditional NFL-style scheme. And what did Andy Reid and this group do? One, they were able to sit him. Trevor Lawrence is not going to have that ability, but what they did was to make that transition easier was they put in a lot of concepts that he was very comfortable with, Stacey, from the college level. And so I expect whoever takes that job over as the play caller to do the same thing for Trevor Lawrence, to make that transition as easy as possible in year one, there's a lot of appeal to that Jacksonville job. Trevor Lawrence, mm-hmm. a ton of cap space, really good draft capital. The Jags, you can't mess this up. I mean, they can. It's very possible that they do. But this is an opportunity that you cannot afford to miss.
It is crazy that this is the same organization that very recently we were talking about rumors that they would relocate and become the first team abroad. Mm-hmm. That they would somehow become London-based or be a regular player there.
Right.
And now they're in play. Well, not in play for the number one spot. They have that locked up. But they could potentially get a quarterback that sets them up as one of the more competitive franchises in the future. Fascinating. I wish I could fast forward 10 years and see how this all unfolds. But alas, I'm just going to have to enjoy the ride. Now, guys, I feel bad for Tua Tagovailoa. I'll tell you why. There are already conversations happening that the Dolphins should use a rare opportunity to they drafted with a high pick. They're going to have another high pick. So the question is, do they take a quarterback? They're not going to have a shot at the top overall pick, Trevor Lawrence. Do they get in there and either trade up or trade or draft right where they are to take another franchise quarterback and just see which one works out? It's not unheard of. I mean,
right.
the Cardinals did this quite recently with Josh Rosen.
Mm-hmm.
What I feel bad for with Tua is that whether or not they do this, presumably Tua stays with the Dolphins next year. Well, Dolphins offensive coordinator Chan Gailey resigned, which means that the Dolphins, for the third time in three seasons, will be hiring a new OC.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those hidden killers of quarterback careers.
Correct.
Whenever people look at, well, what happened to this guy? There's always stuff about arm strength or accuracy and blah, blah, blah. All this stuff that's totally fair. Maybe it was a misevaluation in the first place. What's also a common denominator with a lot of those failed quarterback projects is complete instability with your offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't get a lot of attention paid to it, but it is a huge, huge facet.
Yeah. When I went into college and into my pro career, Stacey, for seven seasons, I had eight different offensive coordinators.
Oof.
So talk about not gross. When you feel like you're finally comfortable in a system and you feel like you're finally getting it and getting the grasp of it, boom, it changes. And you've got somebody that has a different philosophy, a different way to read plays, a different way to call things. And it's a journey. I mean, for me, I learned a lot about the game. And so I personally am grateful for those experiences. It made me a smarter player. It brought me a lot of knowledge about the game, but it was really hard to deal with. But fortunately for Tua, this isn't his third OC. This is only his first OC that he's going through. And really, Chan Gailey, he was the offensive coordinator when I was with the Jets my rookie year. And, you know, Chan Gailey is, I really liked him. He was a good guy. And I thought he did a really good job this season. But Chan Gailey was really there because of the relationship that he had with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Those guys go way, way back, all the way to the Buffalo Bills days that they were together. I just think that this was the right move for the Dolphins if they're really, truly going to be invested in Tua, Stacey. He did not have a normal offseason. He was overcoming injury. I don't think this is a year that you can truly make your decision on Tua Tagovailoa. I think you have to give it another year to really get a beat on whether Tua is the real deal or not. And you also have to be able to provide an offensive coordinator that's going to cater to his strengths. And so I'm curious as to who they end up making that hire.
10
at that
seconds
OC position.
For some reaction from the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line right before we go here from Christian in the 206. It's crazy that teams tank to avoid pressure of winning, but actually they get more pressure in the picks they take. The first round picks you make, especially those like top 10, top 5, and certainly number 1 overall, there's so much pressure with those. You have to be phenomenal to have someone consider that a success. It's an impossible task. There's both a great accomplishment and a burden with being a first-round pick.
There certainly is.
All right. Now, we are getting back to previewing the Seahawks game against the Rams. We're talking about one facet of the Seahawks offense that is going to become incredibly, incredibly important. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Don't miss the Seahawks playoff roundtable today from 3 to 4 p.m. on Wyman and Bob. Every weekday during the playoffs, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton are joined by a cast of our NFL experts with an inside look at the Hawks. The Seahawks playoff roundtable daily 3 to 4 p.m. on the home of the Seahawks playoff run, 710 ESPN Seattle. Curtis, before we jump into this one, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, would like to know who you think is the most likely wild card upset.
Ooh, most likely one. I'm kind of rooting for the Bears over the Saints.
It would be an easier path.
That would be a much easier path.
Seattle,
do I think it's the likeliest, though?
Likeliest. Go likeliest.
Likeliest? Not I'm going to say Baltimore over Tennessee.
All right.
I think the Ravens can beat the Titans. Titans have no pass rush.
How about Colts?
It's true. They have struggled on defense. It's amazing to see, you know, Mike Vrabel, how praised he was last year for how good of a defense they had, right? And they were supposed to add Jadeveon Clowney, and this defense is going to be so much better, this, that, and the other. And, man, similar story to what the Seahawks had last year in terms of their own pass rush and how basically there was none. It's just amazing to see a player like Clowney be so incredibly talented and yet not be able to get any sacks. He gets pressure, but I don't know what it is. Clearly, he is not a leading pass rusher at this stage of his career. He is a role player. If you have a good, effective defensive line and you add Clowney to it, he becomes a valued weapon. But if he is your premier pass rusher and that's all you have, it's not good enough.
Ironically, one of their best games, though, against the Bills when they really got to Josh Allen. Obviously, that was earlier this year on like 14 days of rest or something crazy like that. Bucky Brooks thought that the Colts could upset. Was the most likely upset. He also said the Ravens, but Colts over Bills would surprise me a bit more because I'm predicting Bills, the very popular matchup prediction, Bills, Chiefs, and AFC Chiefs.
Yeah, well, the Bills have just been the hottest team in the league right now, right? So it would be really surprising to see them be a one-and-done playoff team with how well they are playing on both sides of the ball and how well Josh Allen has been playing. That would be a very surprising exit, but Bucky does bring up a really good point, and a point that I feel strongly about is that the Colts do have what it takes. If they're able to come out and play a very good game defensively, they have what it takes to be able to create an upset like that.
Now let's talk about how the Seattle Seahawks in their wild card matchup can play a good game offensively. I have been saying that I'd like to see DK Metcalf beat out Jalen Ramsey. I'm okay with gameplay and game planning in there. Clearly it's the smart way to play football. Selfishly, I agree with Ramsey, who's doing it for his own gameplay and gamesmanship.
Yes.
Selfishly though, I would like to see just a one-on-one matchup, but that's not really the right way to go. Jalen Ramsey is pretty solid. You'll still see it, but you'll see DK Metcalf used a bit more creatively like he was last time around. Seahawks got the better of this team. Jared Goff, officially questionable. So we'll talk about the defensive matchup a bit more tomorrow. Let's look at just the Seahawks offense. It's tough. Either way, pass or the run, you cannot be one-dimensional. You have to make sure that you do both of those things. But the Rams are number one against the pass, and I think two against the run, either or, one of those two things. So it's not like Washington where they've got a weakness that you can exploit.
Mm-hmm.
That said, it seems to me that the Rams are focused on stopping the run with this quarterback often. So how important is it to establish that? Because there are two things about the run game this year. One, it hasn't been the same.
No.
And two, does that make it more or less important this weekend?
Well, it certainly makes it still very, very important. And the reason why it's different is, think about this. This year, they have not had a single running back have over 100 yards rushing all season long.
Mm-hmm.
Not one 100-yard performer has occurred for the Seahawks offense. That is very surprising, especially when you have a back like Chris Carson, especially when you have a back like Carlos Hyde, who had 1,000 yards rushing last year. But the reason for that being is because they've been more of a running back by committee approach. They still have had games where they've rushed for 150 yards plus. They've still had some very good rushing performances. It's just not come from one particular player. But to me, here in cut number three, Brian Schottenheimer, he talked about how he has really seen Chris Carson tap into another level.
See the way he's running, Greg? I've not seen him run with this much confidence, this much determination. Just pull up some of the runs where we get him to the second level and see him challenge safety, see him challenge corners trying to come off blocks at the second level. I've not seen that consistently from him. So I think he's becoming the punisher, right? A lot of times it's the backs that take all these tough hits. He's becoming the more aggressor in those situations. Him getting back, what you would love to see, we'd love to see, is him getting more involved in the passing game.
So interesting thought process there by Shoddy, but at the end there. But what I'm going to focus on is why the Rams feel like they need to stop the running game? Well, if you've got a tremendous pass rush like they do, and Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd have been able to successfully get after the quarterback, and particularly against the Seahawks, you want to make this team one-dimensional. When this offense is balanced and they effectively use the run and the pass just as effectively in the game, they are extremely hard to stop. But if you can count on the Seahawks dropping back and having to pass the ball to win the game, it is much easier to defend for the Rams just the way that they're built. So being able to limit Chris Carson in that running game is going to be huge. But the one thing that is very interesting about this team, Stacey, that you pointed out is that they're different this year. They're not like 2018 and 2019. They don't go in these heavy run formations and trying to run the ball down your throat. They have not necessarily been successful with that this season. They've been successful running the ball, high tempo, spreading you out from time to time. And that's really where they've been able to get their big hitting, big running plays over the course of the season. And I think that they have to continue to do that. And I got to be honest with you, it's time to start getting Carson 20 to 25 carries. And I don't mean forcing the issue, but you got to get him involved. And part of that is you've done everything you can as a coaching staff up to this point to save Chris Carson. I don't want to see him come off the field unless he absolutely has to. I don't want to see Hyde or Penny come in because you wanted to rotate them in and keep everybody fresh. Chris Carson has to be out on the field.
And if there was a defense you were going to do this against and used your most physical tackle-breaking running back, it would be the Rams. Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, they've been saying plenty about this team, I think from a place of respect, but also from a place of pretty fiery competitiveness. They want to beat Seattle. They think they're a better team than Seattle, and they should think that. Quite honestly, their defense has gotten the better of Seattle before. Leonard Floyd has 5 sacks of Russell Wilson. Of Russell Wilson alone, 5 sacks this year. Mm-hmm. This defense and Seattle's offense is the battle here. John Wolford just has to put up enough points to win. But make no mistake, that win last week that everyone's looking at John Wolford about, that was also defensive scores. I don't believe there was an offensive touchdown in that game. I don't think they found the end zone. That was a defensive score involved there. And then a great, valiant defensive effort to keep this offense and this team in playoff contention all season long.
100%.
It is going to be a battle.
I think it is.
My question is it more important that they just do it for the sake of getting the run game going, or is it about where you attack the Rams? Let's look at that a bit more next.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Jake and Stacy.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back.
As a reminder, there was no huddle today. I saw a couple questions about it on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We did that yesterday because it was a weird week for the Seahawks, a bit of a short week. You can download that on the Jake and Stacey podcast hours 2 and 3. Bold Take Friday is still tomorrow. Now, Jake, we were talking during the break about some questions that I had about where Seattle should attack on the field. And rather than make you explain the reasoning, I want to jump ahead to your point, because I thought it was a good one, and it gives fans something to watch for and notice in the game. And your point was that it matters less where Seattle targets on the field and more about their offensive approach versus a very, very difficult Rams defense. I like the way you described what the Rams do to make it difficult and what Seattle should respond with.
Yeah, what they do, it's very hard. And when you talk about their defensive scheme is so good from what they do and make it so hard on opposing offenses because of Jalen Ramsey, essentially. Because of Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald. Those two guys make their defense work and go. You take either one of those guys off the field and it changes the whole complexion of their defense. But really with Jalen Ramsey, in terms of their pass coverage, you leave that guy on an island and you're able to send basically the rest of your defense, right? You're able to send the rest of your 6 guys to focus on the play side of the field or the strength of the formation for an offense. So you're able to overload that side with defenders. So it becomes really difficult to be able to create open windows through your pass concepts, and it really shrinks things down, makes things difficult. And there's ways to get around that, and part of it is what they did last time they played them. Move DK Metcalf around. Move Tyler Lockett around. Force them to over-communicate and to put them in conflict with all of the movement that is happening before the snap of the ball.
Scheme.
Exactly. But the two other things that have to happen in this game is they have to play, the Seahawks have to play with great tempo. It is not going to be good enough or effective for them to wind the ball down to the end of the shot clock, the play clock, to 5 seconds, to 1 second, just to get that last second look at the defense. You have to play with great tempo. You have to dictate to them how the style of this game is going to go. And when you just play ball control offense and you go slow with your tempo, it allows that defense to catch their breath. It allows them to pin their ears back, and they have great confidence in what they do. You need to put stress on them. Look at the first drive that the Seahawks had against the Rams the first time that they played them. Their first possession,
the Alex Collins touchdown.
Yeah, there was a couple big plays that happened in that possession, but more so than anything else, they played with amazing tempo. Unbelievable tempo. They were on the ball, they lined up quickly, they got the play in, they were on the ball right away from the huddle. That's the type of tempo that really stresses defenses out. And this offense definitely can play with that tempo, no question. I don't mean two-minute tempo, but they've got to play with a higher sense of urgency to get on the ball and get their plays off. The second thing that they need to do is they have to be able to effectively run the ball. And I don't care where that comes from. If it comes from big jumbo personnel, which I don't think is in the best interest of this Seahawks offense. I don't think that they're built to do that. You don't have George Fant anymore as your jumbo tight end. You don't have DJ Fluker, who, 340 pounds, and the best thing that he does is get downhill. You don't have those guys. So what you do need to do is play with great tempo, spread them out, use your formations to be able to get great run calls that are to your advantage. And so to me, those three things, tempo, movement before the snap, and then being able to establish an effective ground game with Chris Carson, just put so much pressure off of this passing offense and will allow them to A, sustain drives, and B, get to some of those more explosive plays, Stacey, that this offense has not seen on a regular basis.
Could you make an argument that the two most important people on the team, careful wording here rather than players, is Chris Carson coming out here having one of his best games, and Brian Schottenheimer? Hear me out.
That's a really good question. I think that they are two. Yes, I think that those two guys, they are not the biggest key. The biggest key is going to be Russell Wilson always and forever. But yes.
Hear me out, Jake. Russell Wilson doesn't matter in this game. Your turn. What do you think?
not even close. But Chris Carson getting involved in this game, and as Brian Schottenheimer in the last segment, he said they want to get Chris involved in both the run game and the pass game. You've got to find different ways to get him in space, touch the ball, and to be able to get to the second and third level. Get on the linebackers and the safeties and the corners, because that's where he is able to break so many tackles. He is such a hard defender to bring, or hard running back to bring down. So I think when you look at that opportunity for this offense, like I said at the beginning, Curtis, we'll go back to that that Rocky cut, Rocky IV, when Rocky Balboa is able to make Ivan Drago bleed for the first time. You look at that situation, that's what the Seahawks were able to do in the second half. They played with great tempo. They were able to move the ball up and down the field by taking checkdowns, by getting the run game going. And for the first time in that matchup this season, they found out what?
Lieutenant, you're hurting. You see, he's not a machine. He's a man.
They might be the number one defense in the league, but they're not a machine. They are not a machine. You can beat these guys, and you have done it before. So that should give all the confidence to Russell Wilson and this offense that they can do it again.
We have just a couple minutes here. I was going to keep focusing on, and I will get into our game predictions. I'm actually going to table that because we've still got Bold Takes Friday, a really fun show tomorrow with our game show. So we're going to get into how effective we think the Seahawks offense will be at doing that. First, I've got two quick updates from practice. This from Aaron Levine over at Q13. First, about Shaquille Griffin. Now, Shaquille Griffin was not on the practice report with a hamstring injury. He has had a hamstring injury this year. Not sure if it's the same one, but the thought was, well, did he injure himself in practice? Because he wasn't listed here. He's officially questionable. Aaron Levine says that Carroll said Griffin's hamstring is just a little bit tight and they wanted to give him a day. That sounds good to me. That sounds promising. It sounds like we want to give him a day to rest. Now, the sound from Pete Carroll's press conference, which is happening right now, you, listeners, will be hearing during Wyman and Bob. Do not go anywhere. More updates from Pete Carroll are going to be coming in the next 10 minutes or so. Second thing that's a bit interesting to me, we talked about this possibility with Michael Bumpus the other day, also from Carroll. It is possible Daryl Taylor can play this year. Now, that obviously is completely dependent, I think, on them getting past this round, because I'm not expecting Daryl Taylor, after not playing a snap, to come out and play. But something to keep an eye on. All right, you guys, bold take. Friday is tomorrow. We're going to have our game show, Jake versus Curtis. Whose turn is it to avenge what? Who won last week? Curtis, you the defending champ from last week?
I don't think I am, no.
Jake is the defending champ
you are
from
not.
Last week.
This is playoff version. And Stacey,
yeah?
I have to say that this is going to be a very big challenge on you, because this is the third time we have played Rams.
I know.
Second
time in 3 weeks, and third time this year I have to come up with 8 questions and a tiebreaker about this same team. You know what? Props to me, the real MVP.
Well, we'll find out. We talk about the Seahawks, you know, stepping up to the plate and putting it together a good performance. We're going
to
find out if you're ready for this challenge, Stacey.
I think I can do it. We will be back tomorrow. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere. More news from Carroll coming up on Wyman and Bob next.